I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. There was a time in fighting a war when the soldiers dug the latrines and served up the meals and washed the laundry and fetched the fuel and made sure there was hot water for the showers. No longer. That kind of work is now contracted out to companies like Halliburton, or more specifically to its subsidiary, Kellogg, Brown & Root. Halliburton has other work, like its $7 billion contract to rebuild Iraqi oil fields. These companies are now so big and so much a part of the American fighting machine that you have to wonder if the USA could go to war without them. They do the procurement and the backup and the supply line and the support structure. These companies are coming under increased scrutiny lately, accused of overcharging the Army for meals, for fuel delivery and battlefield support. The Pentagon and the State Department have criminal investigations now underway. This hour, we examine Halliburton and Kellogg Brown Root, or KBR, with two journalists who have studied very carefully the operation of these companies and their links to the White House. For 5 years before he took office, Vice President Dick Cheney was the head of Halliburton. His former company has won billions in government contracts since that time. So what do you want to know about the way these companies work and how they're actually connected to government? Are they changing the way that America fights a war? And in the long run, is it a good thing to have contractors manage the basics while generals and soldiers concentrate on fighting? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Now, before we turn to our two reporters, a few words with Congressman John Dingell. He is a long-serving representative from Michigan, ranking Democrat on the House Committee on Energy and Commerce. He's joining us on the line from his office in Ypsilanti, Michigan. Congressman, nice to have you with us.
Good morning. Pleasure to be here.
What do we know? What are we saying here? Are these companies ripping off the U.S. taxpayers?
Well, there's every reason to believe that that's so. They're functioning under contracts which are cost-plus. They're functioning under contracts which have no bids required.
Okay, but in both those cases, you can't really blame the company, right? It's the government that says no bid. It's the government that agrees to a cost-plus?
I blame the government for this.
Right.
But I blame the company for taking advantage of this once that contract is signed. I don't think we ought to have no-bid contracts in these matters. I don't think that we should have cost-plus contracts. I don't think that we ought to confront a situation where the GAO is weakened by cuts and where we have problems of getting the Inspector General and others into going into these matters. Now, if you want to look at the situation, you can find that that the situation with regard to Halliburton is a very bad one. It is found by GAO to overcharge during the war in the Balkans. A defense audit contract agency found a $61 million overcharge on a fuel contract. Pentagon suspended $36 million in payments because the company inflated the number of meals it served. The company has agreed not to seek payment for an additional $141 million for meals until a discrepancy is involved.
Congressman, just a little bit later on in the program, we'll have a chance to talk to KBR's president, Randy Harrell. We'll ask him about a couple of those. But tell me from your perspective, what about the accusation that you and other Democrats are leveling these charges at Halliburton because it's so closely linked to the vice president?
I don't have any reason to do it for that. I'm trying to look after the public monies. I think if there is a closeness between Mr. Cheney and Halliburton, it should be explored. And quite frankly, it should be. I've never mentioned the fact that Cheney and Halliburton are as closely related as they are. But if anybody else wants to, I say, fine, splendid, go ahead and do it.
So help me with your area of expertise. You've spent a long time looking at the way that the government spends taxpayers' money. When money is paid to private companies to do work like this, does it make it harder for congressional representatives, for oversight agencies, to figure out just where the money's being spent and whether or not it's being well spent?
Well, of course, oversight of public expenditures is always difficult. And when they move things into private companies of this kind, it does become harder, because instead of looking directly at government activities, you have to look to see what a contractor is doing. So the end result is that the whole situation is much more difficult.
So does it mean that the government ought not to be doing business with big private contractors like this and give the work, say, to the Army Corps of Engineers, where you know where the money's being spent?
Well, the answer to that question is yes. But the simple fact of the matter is that the Corps of Engineers has not done as good a job in these matters where they have been involved as they should have.
Right. So what's the answer here?
Well, the answer, I think, first of all, is vigorous and diligent auditing. It is getting out of cost-plus and no-bid contracts. It is looking scrupulously at the behavior of contracts. Remember, and it is also supporting people who are whistleblowers who come in and say, look, these bastards are stealing.
And a little bit later on in the program, we will talk with one of those people who worked with KBR on the ground in Kuwait, find out what he has to say. Congressman, I want to thank you for being with us on the program today.
Pleasure to be with you.
That's Congressman John Dingell, Democrat from Michigan. Joining us now from NPR's Washington studios, Jane Mayer, staff writer for The New Yorker, and Neil King, reporter for The Wall Street Journal. Jane spent some 11 years as a reporter with The Wall Street Journal and as the author of a recent New Yorker article called Contract Sport, What Did the Vice President Do for Halliburton? And Neil's just back from Baghdad. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks very much. Great to be here.
Thank you.
Neil, tell me what you saw while you were over in Iraq. I know you weren't specifically working on stories that directly involved, you know, looking at Halliburton and KBR, but they're kind of hard to avoid over there, I gather.
Very hard. Actually, I had every intention or desire to spend time with KBR, but they weren't terribly interested in having that happen. You can't go very far in Iraq without encountering KBR because they are almost literally omnipresent, especially if you spend any time in the so-called green zone in the center of Baghdad. It's like a 5 square kilometer area,
right,
crawling with U.S. officials and troops and whatnot. KBR is there serving the food. They're the ones that have established all of the housing units. They're the ones that do the laundry, that look after basically every need of any of the people there, all the way down to looking after the huge swimming pool that I'm sure Saddam used to swim in the old days, you know, making sure that it's properly chlorinated and all of that. The officials are everywhere. They run the shuttle buses that move people around there. It's like they're running a huge summer camp, and anything that anybody needs there is looked after by KBR.
Okay, now, Jane, Congressman Dingell made the point that KBR is not cutting its teeth in this particular war in Iraq. I know from your own article that these guys were in Somalia and in the Balkans, and that they're, you know, they built the prisons in Guantanamo. They are in Afghanistan, Georgia, and so on and so forth. But have we ever seen anything like the degree to which military work is now being contracted out to companies like Halliburton and KBR?
No, well, I guess the to really go back to the precedent, they played a big role in the Vietnam War, and with several other companies, they pretty much provided all of the military support and built the barracks and all that kind of thing. The critics at that time used to call them, instead of Brown and Root, they called them burn and loot, so they have been in this business for quite a long time. But in the particular situation of Iraq, the amount of money is unprecedented. We were able to come up with finally a bottom line of $11 billion in contracts that we thought they had in Iraq right now, which is gigantic. I mean, in Somalia, I think they earned something like $109 million. In the Balkans, I think it was $2.2 billion. The price tag seems to be kind of going up and up. And in their company brochure, actually, in the Halliburton annual report, they describe the war on terrorism as a so-called quote-unquote growth area. They are all around the world, hand-in-hand with our war on terrorism.
Now, Neil, I gather from just tracking your own reporting in the Wall Street Journal that things are going from bad to worse for these guys. At one point, there was $16 million they were thought to have overcharged for feeding U.S. soldiers in Kuwait. Then that went up to $28, then $36 million. I mean, where are we with this now?
It does seem to be going from bad to worse. You know, the real problem is that KBR's growth within this contract they call the LOGCAP contract, which is the one looking after all of the needs of the U.S. Army troops basically everywhere in the world, has skyrocketed in terms of its workload last year. Before, in 2002, it was something like $500 or $600 million, the work that they did elsewhere. Then along comes the Iraq War, and last year they did something more close to $4 billion, just under that. So the real problem, I think, being identified even within KBR is that their sort of back shop operations, the kind of accountants and green eyeshade people, just aren't able to keep up with the massive amounts of work that are being heaped on to KBR, and that the problem with the food overcharging at various military bases and so on, is that they've delegated so much of this work in turn to subcontractors, Saudi companies, Kuwaiti companies, et cetera, that have either tallied things in the wrong way or perhaps tried to run off with a bit more profit than they should have. That certainly seems to be the case with the fuel contract that Congressman Dingell mentioned earlier, which was given to a Kuwaiti subcontractor who was then charging exorbitant prices per gallon for the fuel that was being brought into Iraq. So it wasn't necessarily the KBR was making that money, but the U.S. taxpayer wasn't necessarily getting a very good deal.
Well, I think, I mean, it's unclear at this point whether KBR was getting that money. There's people call it the $61 million question. I mean, there's $61 million of waste in that particular deal. And there is a criminal investigation going on in the Department of Defense, which is now also involving the State Department, which is looking at KBR.
That means embassy people, right, Jane?
It does. It hasn't gotten too much attention, but they are looking at a possible role by the U.S. embassy people in Kuwait. What they're looking for is not just kind of accidental cost overruns. Obviously, if it's a criminal investigation, they're looking for corruption and bribery and theft. And certainly, there's plenty of money that disappeared. I mean, it's an incredible amount of money. Nobody ever heard of people charging as much as KBR charged for a gallon of fuel there. I mean, it was, you know, every gallon was a dollar overpriced, and there were millions and millions of gallons.
Now, KBR is doing its own public relations work, trumpeting the fact that it bounced a couple of employees caught taking over $6 million in kickbacks and that sort of thing. But Jane, help me with how the degree to which you think that this story sticks in the headlines because Dick Cheney ran that company up until the time that he took office, and whether there's a conflict of interest or cronyism or just the appearance of it, you can't seem to get away from that link between Cheney and Halliburton.
Well, I do think that is, I mean, and Halliburton in some ways justifiably complains that it's being caught in election year politics. It is the Cheney connection that makes it a particularly juicy or sexy story. It's only because of Cheney that the name Halliburton comes up in almost every Democratic campaign speech one way or another. But it's not just because of Cheney. I think what it is it's the relationship between Cheney and Halliburton is a shorthand for the whole idea of cronyism and for the symbol of what at least the Democrats think is a problem in this administration of corporate interests dominating public policy. They think that the government's too close to what business wants and not thinking enough about what taxpayers and, you know, the rest of the population needs.
Cheney, of course, not making it any easier by keeping that list of energy companies that he consulted with secret, people wondering whether or not Halliburton and KBR and others were a part of that. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Action listeners, this hour we're talking about Halliburton, Kellogg, Brown & Root, two companies that are making a lot of headlines for their involvement with the war in Iraq and Kuwait. When we come back after the break, a chance to speak to the president of KBR and dig a little bit further in this with the two reporters who are my guests this hour, Jane Mayer and Neil King. Our number, 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. This hour, we're talking about Halliburton, more specifically talking about its subsidiary, Kellogg, Brown & Root. A little bit earlier this morning, I asked KBR President and Chief Executive Officer Randy Harl about his company's own internal investigation into those allegations of corruption and overcharging.
Well, Dick, we have a number of things that we do on a continuous basis. First of all, we have an overarching Halliburton Code of Business Conduct that we train, inspect, and manage in the business. And people who work in any management position in the company understand this code and what's required. And it deals with how they should behave, their ethics, and a number of things that we expect and demand from all of our employees. We also have strong internal controls.
And it seems in this case that a number of those controls failed. Are you concerned about that?
Well, those controls have not failed. They have, I think the system is working, is what's been demonstrated here. And the issues that have been raised in many cases were found by our own internal auditors, and we are fully investigating those, and we'll bring that to resolution in the next few weeks.
Mr. Harlow, war in Iraq has proven to be very lucrative for Kellogg Brown & Root, but has also at the same time focused a lot of attention on your company and its links to the vice president. What kind of difficulties does that create for you, sitting as the man in charge of the company?
Well, this is a very large operation. We are doing a great job to deliver the services that this company has at its disposal. I think that the customer, the men and women of the U.S. Armed Forces that are on the ground get a little bit better quality of life as a result of the things that we're doing there. And I think if you check with that ultimate customer, you'll find that that our ability to be able to have hot meals, to be able to provide a shower, to be able to get people out of tents and into to a better quality of life is something that is greatly appreciated. And our customer recognizes this, and it's going very well.
But a lot of people say that you get the contracts that you get because of who you know rather than because of how good you are, and I'm wondering whether or not you think that scrutiny is unfair.
Well, the government procurement process just doesn't allow that to happen, and anyone that knows how that works knows what a great level playing field gets created anytime there's a government procurement. We abide by the rules, the government abides by the rules, and we win the work that we have on the basis of our capabilities, and that coupled with the price that we have given to deliver this is the reason that we were selected. We're selected, and we're proud of the record that we have.
But you're never really going to shake that monkey off your back.
I appreciate your questions, but our time is up, and we're going to have to run. We're about 10 minutes over what we were going to today.
That's the voice of Patrice Mingo, who's KBR's manager of public relations. I'd actually been talking with Randy Harl for less than 5 minutes when she cut the interview off with other commitments that she said the head of KBR had at that point. We're joined on the line now from Houston, Texas, by Henry Bunting. Henry worked as a buyer in Kuwait for Kellogg Brown and Root. Henry, it's good to have you on the line.
It's nice to be here.
You worked for 5 months for that company and then quit. Is that right?
That's correct. I worked 15 weeks for KBR in Kuwait under the LOGCAP 3 contract.
In a nutshell, Henry, what were you doing there?
I was purchasing commodities, everything from drugs and soap to stationery to office furniture. Anything that came over came into the office, the requisition was handed to me as well as some other buyers, and we purchased it on the local market.
Now, how many purchase orders a day would you say you were handling?
I had on an average of anywhere between 80 and 150 active purchase requisitions on my desk. That would convert into perhaps 15 or 20 purchase orders a day, every day, 7 days a week.
Now, you went to see the Senate Democrats to explain what you think was going wrong in KBR's operation in Kuwait. What was going wrong there, Henry?
Well, I raised the question as to the KBR business practices. That is, the way that they set out to quote jobs, the total lack of concern for cost. It was frequently said by by my supervisor and by the manager that this is a cost-plus contract. We don't care what it costs, just order it in.
Now, you just listened to the president of the company talking about the code of business conduct of KBR, the internal controls that he said were in place. Are you saying that those codes and controls were not being exercised while you were in Kuwait?
They were not being exercised. They may have been in place, but they were completely ignored. For example, I had a procurement manual that I used as a stand for my laptop computer. I never once opened that during the 15 weeks that I was in Kuwait.
Henry, help me look at it from the other side for just half a second, though. It was wartime. People were saying, look, I need 500 blankets and I need them yesterday. Get the damn blankets. Can you say under those circumstances that business practices need to be set aside?
No, I don't believe that the good purchasing practices need to be set aside for expediency. there is plenty of opportunity to go out and seek vendors to look at what they can provide and determine what vendors are cost effective instead of just taking it off a preferred list of vendors and saying, here, find 500 blankets and keep it under $2,500 and we'll place the order with you.
Keep it under $2,500 means that a certain level of scrutiny doesn't apply, is that right?
That's correct. You had to, if it was under $2,500, you didn't have to get two quotes.
Did the taxpayers get hosed?
I think they did, yes.
All right, Henry, thanks for being with us. I need to move on here.
Okay.
Henry Bunting was working in the purchasing department with KBR in Kuwait. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. With me on the program as we take a look at the latest news around Halliburton and its subsidiary, Kellogg Brown & Root, Jane Mayer. She's staff writer with The New Yorker. Neil King is a reporter for The Wall Street Journal. And just a quick word of response from the two of you to what you're hearing on one hand from the company saying all is well, and the other extreme, people like Henry Bunting who are speaking up saying, boy, it's a mess.
They go well together in a way because it's interesting. The whole cost-plus issue, which obviously Congressman Dingell brought up before, it has two real evils. One is that it has no real built-in incentive to keep costs down. The other is that there really seems to be no alternative to it, in that it's hard to imagine what other scenario one could really use if you're going to order a company like KBR to go in and do an undetermined amount of work in a hurry with an unknown duration of time for 130,000 troops. You can't really do a fixed contract in the way that, say, Bechtel is doing work in Iraq under a fixed fee contract. So I don't really see how it's escapable, but on the other hand, it has so many woes built into it, and KBR has certainly shown where they are.
Jane, what do you think?
Well, I think what you see in this is exactly the problem. And if you step away, I think it raises a lot of questions about whether it's a wise move for the Pentagon to go to private businesses to provide so many services to our troops.
But wasn't the original intent of that, Jane, to save money? To say,
yes,
look,
that's the irony of all of this. I mean, the original idea was that it was to reform overcharges in the government, and they were going to turn to the marketplace because competition would lead to lower costs. But the problem is there really isn't much competition for a company like Halliburton. Hardly any other company can do both oil services and construction and battlefield support, building all those things, bringing in the food, doing all the meal preparation and the laundry and everything else. I mean, it's just there's hardly any other company in the world who can do that. So you no longer really have the advantages of competition. Instead, what you have is the kind of the tail wagging the dog. The company can do pretty much what it wants to do, and there isn't very much oversight. As Henry Bunting said, he may have a manual, but he doesn't open it, and neither does anybody in the government really have the ability to perform complete oversight here. So we're just sort of stuck paying the bills, whatever they may be.
Our number is 1-800-423-8255, and our listeners have been very patient on the lines. Let's go first to Wilmington, North Carolina. Chris has been is holding on the line. Chris, thanks for calling.
Hi, Dick. I appreciate the opportunity. There's two things that I don't hear anyone addressing. One is that companies like this make it very convenient and very easy for us to actually go to war. When you have someone else taking care of it, taking care of the grunt work, you know, you get these volunteers in there. They know they're not going to have to clean toilets. They know they're not going to be working in the KP. They're there, you know, just to be put in front of the bullets, basically. That bothers me greatly. And number two is, when we put this much trust and this much confidence in a private contractor, we are at their beck and call, and it compromises the security of the country to have this much of our defense of our country shouldered by a private company.
Chris, I want to take your two questions and split them with my two guests, because I know Jane on the level of whether or not a company like Halliburton makes it easier for the U.S. to go to war. This is something, an observation that was made to you as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think the caller has a great point. I mean, it is something that there was a retired Air Force colonel named Sam Gardner, who I interviewed, who made exactly the same point. And he said he thought that it had been kind of lost in the jumble of all of this. But if you've got a company standing by waiting to, you know, make its profits by going to war, you've got kind of an automatic incentive there, at least for that company. And then meanwhile, when you take away KP duty, really is what it used to all sort of fall under, from often it was reserves who were called up to do that kind mm-hmm. of thing. The reserves are the ones that often grumble the loudest because they have to, you know, their civilian lives are disruptive to be put into war, and you lose that friction, that grumbling, that political complaint. The whole process just becomes greased this way, and I think it is a really interesting public policy question.
Neil King, Chris's second point about being forced in many ways to place all that trust, all that confidence in the goodwill of a private company that's operating on a cost-plus basis, is going to make more money if it makes more wars, makes something that he says makes him pretty uncomfortable.
Yeah, I understand that. I mean, I don't know. I see it from a slightly different point of view. At least I'm not completely convinced that we would be better off necessarily going with the Army Corps of Engineers or some government agency, because for one, it would strip out the kind of, I mean, what we are at least seeing at the moment is an adversarial relationship between the Pentagon, at least the defense contract audit agency people, the Inspector General's Office, et cetera, and KBR.
Well, it's just become adversarial, hasn't it, Neil, in recent
Yeah,
weeks?
But it is very much that way at the moment. I mean, KBR has been incensed that the kind of things have come out that they're, you know, now having to withhold hundreds of millions of dollars in billing. I'm not necessarily convinced that if it were the Army Corps, that the Army Corps would have to refund money that it was thought, you know, who do you refund it to? I mean, there is a degree of friction between the private sector and government, which is probably good. The one thing I just wanted to point out quickly, though, in our kind of hyper-concentration on Halliburton, the one thing that has been extraordinarily overlooked, not in this conversation, but just all the way around, is that the people that truly, of course, make the money off war, and the people that are where the incestuousness is even more intense, are the huge people that are actually supplying the things that do the wars. You know, the supply, the tanks, the right. airplanes, et cetera. I mean, that's the area where if there is something that is worrisome on the national security front, it would be that kind of more traditional military-industrial complex area than just sort of the looking after the troops aspect that KBR is involved in, it would seem to me.
I mean, I agree with Neil that there is certainly more profit in those giant weapon systems. I mean, that really is in many ways even more worrisome. But certainly there was a fair amount of money made at Halliburton by Dick Cheney. I mean, he was there for 5 years and he took home $40 million, which is, I think, part of the reason why this has become such a political football. It was a vast amount of money and made in a very short amount of time. And then he turned around and is seen as one of the major proponents of a war that in turn has brought $11 billion worth of business to Halliburton.
I just wanted to point out one thing, actually, in the layering of sort of interconnections between Cheney and Halliburton. The interesting one is also the one that goes before Cheney going to Halliburton, which is when he was defense secretary and was one of the major forces pushing for the whole sort of privatization of warfare in a way that made him all the more attractive to Halliburton as a CEO, and then kind of led increasingly to the kind of work that Halliburton's now doing.
So it's one thing leading very much to another. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Our number's 1-800-423-8255. To Lowell, Massachusetts now. Kathy's on the line. Kathy, thank you for calling.
Well, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say that never in the history of the United States has such corporate cronyism been so closely tied to the administration, except maybe during the robber baron stage. Mr. Cheney, I think, still receives some kind of stipend from Halliburton from the time that he served as CEO. And
that's right, also, isn't it? Cheney takes in about $150,000 a year still in deferred
something
payments?
Something like $150,000 a year, yeah. And he has stock options worth about $18 million, but I believe he's donating the proceeds from those to charities of his choice.
Okay, all right. No, that still does not absolve him of the whole corporate cronyism tie here. And the American taxpayer really is getting hammered. I heard that they charge, I think, $28 per soldier per day for food, and there are many other smaller firms that could provide food and sustenance for our soldiers at a much cheaper rate.
I'll tell you a story about the food that has not been out that I thought was kind of amazing. Somebody I interviewed who was competing for the food contract said, I think it was $25 a head for food that he was hearing. He said, God, for that, they could be serving lobster. And he was told, well, actually, they are. And it is true that KBR is serving lobster once a week, lobster and steak dinners, and sometimes Alaska king crab legs. So that's what the taxpayers are paying for over there.
Now, one of the answers that KBR has put out in response to accusations that it's overcharging for the meals is, we don't know how many people we're supposed to feed. We don't know at this kitchen whether or not we're feeding X number of translators or whether or not this patrol is going to come in. Neil, bring me to a sort of Baghdad perspective of this. Can KBR make a case that really under some of the circumstances it's operating, it's kind of hard to know or predict or do this as perhaps as precisely as taxpayers might like?
Yeah, there's a little bit of that, except if you go back to the first thing that they were stung on the food overcharging, which is one of the biggest bases in Kuwait where U.S. forces are. I actually saw the sort of, you know, month-by-month accounting for that. And I think it was the month of July that they were under the impression that I'm not sure if this is a figure, but 30,000 people a day might show up. Well, every day that month, it was more like 4,000 people that showed up. So instead of saying, well, if every day 4,000 people are actually coming here, so let's downgrade our estimate and make food for 4,500 people, they continued to charge every day for the 30,000 or whatever the figure was and not for the 3,000 or 4,000. So, you know, there are obviously cafeterias all over the country that have to deal with an unknown amount of business, and they deal with it in a much more efficient way than just billing for the highest possible number of people that could conceivably show up. They're now trying to refine that a bit, and I saw it, actually. I went through the KBR dining line in the main presidential palace in Baghdad, and they now have people filling out, you know, a little thing.
How was the food?
It was all right. I mean, people actually don't complain too much about the food, but there is some nicer food, as Jane pointed out.
We need to take a short break. We'll be back to talk more about Halliburton, its subsidiary, Kellogg Brown and Root. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. It certainly is a relationship that is changing the way this country fights a war. We'd like your thoughts on that. 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. A reminder, once again, our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255 for you to join our conversation this hour about the business relationship that exists currently between the administration, Halliburton, its subsidiary Kellogg Brown and Root. We're going to go to Arlington, Virginia. Doug's waiting on the line. Doug, thanks for calling.
Hi. Great program.
Thanks.
I think my main point here is just, you know, how much it costs for KBR to do these sorts of things compared to what the Army would cost. As it turns out, and I think there's been a number of studies on this, it costs the Army between 30% and 200% more to do the same sorts of services that KBR is providing.
You're remembering the $640 toilet seats, are you?
Exactly. That's a big issue. And, of course, the other point would be just because somebody's cleaning the latrines doesn't mean you're going to go to war. And I think that was one of your other caller's point. The reality is KBR is providing a service that the Army needs, and it does it much more efficiently than the Army. Does it mean it's a very efficient company? Maybe not. Maybe we can put more competition in. But the reality is it's a hell of a lot more efficient than the military.
Is it? Is it, though, Jane?
Well, I don't know how many recent studies there's been made. That certainly was the original idea. But as we were discussing earlier, it was premised on the notion that there might be competition that would sort of provide cost pressure. What we've seen is this Neil was talking about the log cap contract. The log cap contract is a kind of an omnibus contract that allows one company to do all of the support system for the U.S. troops all around the world for a certain amount of time. It goes in 5-year increments. And the cost of that has gone up and up and up and up. So you have to think that maybe Maybe it started efficient and is less efficient now. I think their oversight and transparency are two sort of buzzwords that are used all the time as problems here. There doesn't seem to be enough oversight, and there certainly doesn't seem to be enough transparency, so that there's not enough of a way to kind of get a grip on the companies.
And Neil, when we make that comparison again, for Doug's benefit, between having the Army do the work or Army divisions do the work, and comparing that to private companies, we're talking about a part of the world where, you know, it's already difficult to do business. When KBR went to purchase fuel from Kuwait, they were pretty well told that's who you're buying it from. That's the price you're going to pay. So that wouldn't have made much difference if it had been the Army cutting the same deal, would it?
That whole contract at the moment remains so murky, it's really hard to say. I mean, there is some indication of possible sort of collusion by people at the embassy telling them to go to a certain place for kind of political, let's help Kuwait reasons. But then again, if there were pressures within the State Department or elsewhere within the government, I would think that the Army would probably be just as prone to succumbing to those as would KBR. I would tend to agree by and large that you're going to get better service using a private contractor than you are generally from the Army, which also can be pretty extraordinarily wasteful. But it's also abundantly clear that this particular mechanism just doesn't nearly have as many checks and balances in it, all the way down into the lower levels, which is what Mr. Bunting was talking about. When it comes down to the actual guy ordering the blankets or whatever, if he's just sort of willy-nilly going to the preferred list of vendors and saying, keep it under 2,500, it's obvious that we have a pretty systemic problem all the way down to the ordering of blankets.
I mean, and there are other questions, I think, other than just plain cost efficiency that are interesting. A private company, for instance, unlike the government, is not doesn't have to necessarily respond to Freedom of Information Act requests, so that it's harder for the public to get information about, you know, cost and everything else going on inside a company like that. They also can be there's a whole can of worms that is raised by this that we haven't talked about, but it's that private companies can make campaign contributions. The employees there can, and Halliburton has made hundreds of thousands of campaign contributions over the years, mostly to Republican candidates who, in turn, have favored policies that have helped the company. So you don't see that when it's public employees, because they're covered by the Hatch Act and they can't get involved in sort of political campaigns and contributions in the same way.
All right, back to our calls. Doug, thanks for that. To Groton, Massachusetts now, and Iris is on the line. Hi, Iris.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I'm glad that someone is addressing the efficiencies of this war, but I'm concerned, too, that Dick Cheney was one of the big cheerleaders of this war when it was questionable whether or not we should go into it. And I think that people that are in position to do that kind of policy making, to be this close to the company that profits from the war, is very troubling. And I wonder how you address that.
Well, how well is he managing that, Jane, in Washington? How well is Cheney sort of keeping his old ties with Halliburton at arm's length?
It's very hard to tell, and I hate to admit it as a reporter, because you feel like you've failed to get certain information that everybody wants to know, but it's really hard to know with Cheney, for instance, whether he's got an ongoing dialogue going with friends at Halliburton or not. I think over time, since he's been in office, they have talked. It's very hard to gauge whether there's any closeness there. Certainly,
are they fishing or hunting together?
That sort of thing. Yes. Cheney has some. He's taken a lot of legal steps to make sure that you can't accuse him of having a conflict of interest in terms of his stock options. You know, he's made it clear. He's taken precautions so that if the price of the stock goes up or down, either way, he's got insurance so that it won't affect his own interests. And that way you can't say that he's standing by and trying to make money off of Halliburton getting business.
All right. But let me, if I can, Jane, have you take us back to the way that you started your piece in The New Yorker, because at that point, when you're not making any links between Cheney and the company, but you make the observation that this company is in Iraq now, operating, 7, 10, $11 billion contracts on what began as how do you put it, a secret task force and not allowing anyone else to bid for this work?
Well, that also has been lost in this conversation, which is that Halliburton has gotten very special treatment in this war for that one reason in particular. It had this, what we were talking about, this omnibus contract, but there was a separate piece of work that was not covered by that contract, which was to rebuild the oil fields and the oil business in Iraq, which is up to $7 billion worth of work. And other companies wanted to see if they could bid for that work as well, and they were turned away, and it was just plain handed over to Halliburton because, I guess, the Department of Defense felt that Halliburton was nearby, could do it. They knew they could do it, and it was just handy, basically, and that they would do it in secrecy as well. And they already had the security clearances to be in that part of the world and doing things like that. So at any rate, that was a tremendous amount of business that was not competitively bid out, and I think that is the root of a lot of the complaints about cronyism here.
And in fairness, Neil, I mean, something that big and that non-competitive is always going to raise that kind of cronyism alert, isn't it?
I think definitely so. I mean, it was a weird moment in history when also USAID, the Agency for International Development, and others were, you know, planning for the post-war aftermath scenario and putting out contracts and the like in secrecy because of the oddity of the government both saying that they hadn't decided whether to invade Iraq while they were diligently planning for the post-war scenario. That contract, though, the rebuilding of the oil fields contract, has since been rebid. And to many people's astonishment, KBR won it again, except for the southern area of the country. Mm-hmm. And another company is now doing the equivalent work in the northern part of the country. But it was amid all of the various flurry of allegations and findings of lousy accounting at best last December, I think it was, that they won won this again in order to do the work in the southern part of Iraq.
It is, I guess, as KBR's public relations department is discovering more about the appearance rather than the reality that you have to live with when you're working that close on something that's that controversial. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Next to Beaufort, South Carolina, and Priscilla's joining us. Priscilla, thanks for calling.
Appreciate you taking my call. I'll make this really brief.
Yeah.
I have two children that are over there, and one of your guests with the comment was jokingly or tongue-in-cheek about the lobsters and the crab legs. These children are over there, and these are our children, and through no fault of their own, they're having to be there because of our president. I don't care whether you feed them three meals a day of Maine lobster. They deserve it. They're putting their lives on the line. And there's the question about funding. Certainly we're spending trillions of dollars. We're trillions of dollars in debt. Feed the kids, however.
But Priscilla, tell me whether or not you scratch your head over what appears from my perspective here to be some inconsistencies here. I know of families that are still trying to raise the money to get a flak jacket for their son or daughter that's serving overseas because there aren't enough of those to go around. So, I mean, if it is Maine lobster twice a day and no flak jacket, something's wrong.
You're right. You're absolutely right. And why are we spending money elsewise? If there's a question, then we certainly need to get it from our president. If they fund into his to make him pay for it. But as far as the food goes, certainly feed our kids.
Well, can't argue with that.
I've got to say I'm in favor of them being fed as well. It's not just the troops that are being fed the lobster. It's also all of those contractors of, you know, and they're, I think if you add them all in, there's something like 150,000 non-soldiers over there being fed in Iraq every day as well. So
can we just, you know, do the math?
I don't know. I don't know how people would feel about the lobster. I mean, I'm certainly I was surprised because we don't have lobster every week in my family. But then again, I'm not fighting a war. So
help me with the numbers, though, Jane. You just mentioned about 150,000 support people, and I'm not sure what the latest figure is on the troop numbers there. It's something like 130,000. Am I right with that?
I think that's right. Neil may know better because he's just been over there. But Sam Gardner, the retired Air Force colonel, was suggesting to me when I interviewed him that if the public really was seeing all of the numbers, the numbers would be, you know, of people over there, they'd be twice the number of troops. If there were no private contractors and Congress really had to support the full number of people there, you'd be seeing about double what we've sent over there.
Neil, we'd have a different story we were talking about if we were talking about 250 or 300,000 troops in Iraq today.
It is true. I mean, the argument about whether all of this makes it more easy to go to war is certainly the case. But, of course, that's how it was also designed. It was meant to make it more sort of smooth in its operations. I'm trying to add up the figures as to whether that would be right. I mean, I know that there are like 2,500 people that work for the Coalition Provisional Authority, which is itself a huge amount of people, especially when they're concentrated in areas of Baghdad and so on. And there are many thousands of contractors there, so it is a very large number. KBR's own presence is very large.
Can either of you help me, though, with what happens next in terms of the investigations? When you've got the State Department doing a criminal investigation, the Pentagon's Inspector General calling for a criminal investigation, are the results of that swift? Are they public? What should we expect?
It's really hard to say. I mean, the IGs of the various departments within the U.S. government are not meant to be known for their transparency. They're not even meant to be confirming whether they're doing one of these investigations, which the State Department has not really wanted to do. But I don't know. My own hunch would be that we would probably see some sort of results in a matter of weeks, maybe a couple of months at the most. I have really no ability to predict what the outcome might be or whether it would actually result in some sort of criminal charges against KBR.
Okay, what's interesting to me is that there's now a movement towards an open investigation in Parliament in Kuwait to investigate these overcharges because they seem to lead directly to the Kuwaiti royal family. Yet in Congress, I think one of the reasons things can happen slowly is that here in Congress there's been very little appetite for investigating this because with Republicans in the majority in both the House and the Senate and in the same party as the White House, there's really been it's been less than aggressive in terms of wanting to take up these issues.
And in an election year, who wants to talk about this anyway, right?
Well, the Democrats do, but
<I know. laughs>
certainly not the Republicans.
Jane, I want to thank you for being with us on the program today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Jane Mayer's a reporter for The New Yorker. Neil King, it was good to have you with us. Thanks.
Pleasure. Thanks.
Neil King's a reporter for The Wall Street Journal. We were joined earlier by Representative John Dingell from Michigan, Henry Bunting, a former Halliburton employee, and Randy Carl, current president of Kellogg, Brown and Root. We invite you to continue the conversation in our online forums. We are at www.theconnection.org. Our program is produced by Nancy Cohen, Catherine Fenollosa, Sarah Field, Steph Kotsonis, Kelly Jones, Jen Mattson, Christina Russo, and Doug Sugarts. Our interns are Jennifer Giles and Matt Miller. Tara Murphy is our senior producer. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.